"We aren't afraid of them," said the bishop. "They're savages, for heaven's sake." "That's how we look to the buggers, too," said Ender. "But to Pipo and Lebo and Wanda and Miro, the piggies have never looked like savages. They're different from us, yes, far more different than framlings. But they're still people. Ramen, not Varelze. So when Lebo saw that the piggies were in danger of starving, that they were preparing to go to war in order to cut down the population, he didn't act like a scientist. He didn't observe their war and take notes on the death and suffering. He acted like a Christian. He got experimental amaranth that Novenia had rejected for human use because it was too closely akin to Lusitanian biochemistry, and he taught the piggies how to plant it and harvest it and prepare it as food. I have no doubt that the rise in piggy population and the fields of amaranth are what the Starways Congress saw. Not a willful violation of the law, but an act of compassion and love.
"How can you call such disobedience a Christian act?" said the bishop.
"What man of you is there, when his son asks for bread, will give him a stone?"
"The devil can quote scripture to suit his own purpose," said the bishop.
"I'm not the devil," said Ender. "And neither are the piggies. Their babies were dying of hunger, and Lebo gave them food and saved their lives."
"And look what they did to him!"
"Yes. Let's look what they did to him. They put him to death, exactly the way they put to death their own most honored citizens. Shouldn't that have told us something?"
"It told us that they're dangerous and have no conscience," said the bishop.
"It told us that death means something completely different to them. If you really believed that someone was perfect in heart, bishop, so righteous that to live another day could only cause them to be less perfect, then wouldn't it be a good thing for them if they were killed and taken directly into heaven?"
"You mock us. You don't believe in heaven, but you do.
What about the martyrs, Bishop Peregrino? Weren't they caught up joyfully into heaven?"
"Of course they were, but the men who killed them were beasts. Murdering saints didn't sanctify them. It damned their murderers' souls to hell forever."
"But what if the dead don't go to heaven? What if the dead are transformed into a new life right before your eyes? What if, when a piggy dies, if they lay out his body just so, it takes root and turns into something else? What if it turns into a tree that lives 50 or 100 or 500 years more?"
"What are you talking about?" demanded the bishop. "Are you telling us that the piggies somehow metamorphose from animal to plant?" asked Dom Kristaun.
"Basic biology suggests that this isn't likely." "Oh, it's practically impossible," said Ender. "That's why there are only a handful of species on Lusitania that survived the Descolada, because only a few of them were able to make the transformation. When the piggies kill one of their people, he is transformed into a tree, and the tree retains at least some of its intelligence. Because today I saw the piggies sing to a tree, and without a single tool touching it, the tree severed its own roots, fell over, and split itself into exactly the shapes and forms of wood and bark that the piggies needed. It wasn't a dream. Miro and Wanda and I all saw it with our own eyes and heard the song and touched the wood and prayed for the soul of the dead."
"What does this have to do with our decision?" demanded Boschina.
"So the forests are made up of dead piggies. That's a matter for scientists. I'm telling you that when the piggies killed Pipo and Lebo, they thought they were helping them transform into the next stage of their existence. They weren't beasts. They were ramen, giving the highest honor to the men who had served them so well."
"Another moral transformation, is that it?" asked the bishop. "Just as you did today in your speaking, making us see Marcos Ibera again and again, each time in a new light. Now you want us to think the piggies are noble. Very well, they're noble. But I won't rebel against Congress with all the suffering such a thing would cause, just so our scientists can teach the piggies how to make refrigerators.
Please, said Novinia.
They looked at her expectantly.
You say that they stripped our files. They read them all?
Yes, said Boschina.
Then they know everything that I have in my files about the Descolada.
Yes, said Boschina. Novinia folded her hands in her lap.
There won't be any evacuation.
I didn't think so, said Ender. That's why I asked Ella to bring you.
Why won't there be an evacuation? Asked Boschina. Because of the Descolada.
Nonsense, said the bishop. Your parents found a cure for that.
They didn't cure it, said Novinia. They controlled it. They stopped it from becoming active.
That's right, said Boschina.
That's why we put the additives in the water, the colador.
Every human being on Lusitania, except perhaps the speaker who may not have caught it yet, is a carrier of the Descolada.
The additive isn't expensive, said the bishop, but perhaps they might isolate us. I can see that they might do that.
There's nowhere isolated enough, said Novinia. The Descolada is infinitely variable. It attacks any kind of genetic material. The additive can be given to humans, but can they give additives to every blade of grass, to every bird, to every fish, to every bit of plankton in the sea?
They can all catch it? Asked Boschina.
I didn't know that.
I didn't tell anybody, said Novinia. But I built the protection into every plant that I developed. The amaranth, the potatoes, everything. The challenge wasn't making the protein usable. The challenge was to get the organisms to produce their own Descolada blockers.
Boschina was appalled.
So, anywhere we go, we can trigger the complete destruction of the biosphere.
And you kept this a secret? Asked Domkirstaun.
There was no need to tell it. No one had ever left Lusitania, and no one was planning to go.
Novinia looked at her hands in her lap.
Something in the information had caused the piggies to kill people. I kept it secret so no one else would know. But now, what Ella has learned over the last few years, and what the speaker has said tonight, now I know what it was that people learned. The Descolada doesn't just split the genetic molecules and prevent them from reforming or duplicating. It also encourages them to bond with completely foreign genetic molecules. Ella did the work on this against my will. All the native life on Lusitania thrives in plant and animal pairs. The cabra with the capim, the water snakes with the grama, the suck flies with the reeds, the Zingadora bird with the tropeco vines, and the piggies with the trees of the forest.
You are saying that one becomes the other? Domkirstaun was at once fascinated and repelled.
The piggies may be unique in that,
in transforming from the corpse of a piggy into a tree, said Novinia.
But perhaps the cabras become fertilized from the pollen of the capim. Perhaps the flies are hatched from the tassels of the river reeds. It should be studied. I should have been studying it all these years.
And now they'll know this? Asked Domkirstaun. From your files?
Not right away. But sometime in the next 10 or 20 years, before any other Framlings get here, they'll know, said Novinia.
I am not a scientist, said the bishop. Everyone else seems to understand except me. What does this have to do with the evacuation?
Boschina fidgeted with her hands.
They can't take us off Lusitania, she said.
Anywhere they took us, we'd carry the Descolada with us, and it would kill everything. There aren't enough xenobiologists in the 100 worlds to save even a single planet from devastation. By the time they get here, they'll know that we can't leave.
Well then, said the bishop, that solves our problem. If we tell them now, they won't even send a fleet to evacuate us.
No, said Ender. Bishop Peregrino, once they know what the Descolada will do, they'll see to it that no one leaves this planet, ever.
The bishop scoffed.
What, do you think they'll blow up the planet?
Come now, Speaker. There are no more Enders among the human race. The worst they might do is quarantine us here.
In which case, said Don Cristan, why should we submit to their control at all? We could send them a message telling them about the Descolada, informing them that we will not leave the planet, and they should not come here, and that's it. Bosquinha shook her head.
Do you think that none of them will say, the Lusitanians, just by visiting another world, can destroy it? They have a starship. They have a known propensity for rebelliousness. They have the murderous piggies. Their existence is a threat.
Who would say that? Said the bishop.
No one in the Vatican, said Ender.
But Congress isn't in the business of saving souls.
And maybe they'd be right, said the bishop. You said yourself that the piggies want starflight. And yet, wherever they might go, they'll have this same effect. Even uninhabited worlds, isn't that right? What will they do? Endlessly duplicate this bleak landscape, forests of a single tree, prairies of a single grass, with only the cabra to graze it, and only the zingadora to fly above it?
Maybe someday we could find a way to get the Descolada under control, said Ella.
We can't stake our future on such a thin chance, said the bishop.
That's why we have to rebel, said Ender.
Because Congress will think exactly that way, just as they did 3,000 years ago in the Xenocide. Everybody condemns the Xenocide because it destroyed an alien species that turned out to be harmless in its intentions. But as long as it seemed that the buggers were determined to destroy humankind, the leaders of humanity had no choice but to fight back with all their strength. We are presenting them with the same dilemma again. They're already afraid of the piggies, and once they understand the Descolada, all the pretense of trying to protect the piggies will be done with. For the sake of humanity's survival, they'll destroy us. Probably not the whole planet. As you said, there are no Enders today, but they'll certainly obliterate Milagre and remove any trace of human contact, including killing all the piggies who know us. Then they'll set a watch over this planet to keep the piggies from ever emerging from their primitive state. If you knew what they know, wouldn't you do the same?
A speaker for the dead says this, said Don Cristan.
You were there, said the bishop. You were there the first time, weren't you, when the buggers were destroyed?
Last time we had no way of talking to the buggers, no way of knowing they were Raman and not Varelze. This time, we're here. We know that we won't go out and destroy other worlds. We know that we'll stay here on Lusitania until we can go out safely, the Descolada neutralized. This time, said Ender, we can keep the Raman alive so that whoever writes the piggies story won't have to be a speaker for the dead.
The secretary opened the door abruptly, and Wanda burst in. Bishop, she said. Mayor, you have to come.
Novinia.
What is it, said the bishop.
Wanda, I have to arrest you, said Bosquinha.
Arrest me later, she said. It's Miro. He climbed over the fence.
He can't do that, said Novinia. It might kill him. Then, in horror, she realized what she had said. Take me to him.
Get Navio, said Donna Cristo.
You don't understand, said Wanda. We can't get to him. He's on the other side of the fence.
Then what can we do? Asked Bosquinha.
Turn the fence off, said Wanda.
Bosquinha looked helplessly at the others.
I can't do that. The committee controls that now, by Ansible. They'd never turn it off.
Then Miro's as good as dead, said Wanda.
No, said Novinha.
Behind her, another figure came into the room. Small, fur-covered. None of them but Ender had ever before seen a piggy in the flesh, but they knew at once what the creature was.
Excuse me, said the piggy. Does this mean we should plant him now?
No one bothered to ask how the piggy got over the fence. They were too busy realizing what he meant by planting Miro.
No! Screamed Novinha.
Mandachuva looked at her in surprise.
No?
I think, said Ender, that you shouldn't plant any more humans. Mandachuva stood absolutely still.
What do you mean? Said Wanda.
You're making him upset.
I expect he'll be more upset before this day is over, said Ender.
Come, Wanda, take us to the fence where Miro is.
What good will it do if we can't get over the fence? Asked Bosquinha.
Call for Navio, said Ender.
I'll go get him, said Donna Cristan.
You forget that no one can call anybody.
I said, what good will it do? Demanded Boskinya. I told you before, said Ender. If you decide to rebel, we can sever the Ansible connection, and then we can turn off the fence.
Are you trying to use Miro's plight to force my hand? Asked the bishop.
Yes, said Ender. He's one of your flock, isn't he? So leave the 99, shepherd, and come with us to save the one that's lost.
What's happening? Said Mandachuva.
You're leading us to the fence, said Ender.
Hurry, please.
They filed down the stairs from the bishop's chambers to the cathedral below. Ender could hear the bishop behind him grumbling about perverting scripture to serve private ends. They passed down the aisle of the cathedral, Mandachuva leading the way. Ender noticed that the bishop paused near the altar, watching the small furred creature as the humans trooped after him. Outside the cathedral, the bishop caught up with him.
Tell me, speaker, he said, just as a matter of opinion, if the fence came down, if we rebelled against Starway's Congress, would all the rules about contact with the piggies be ended?
I hope so, said Ender. I hope that there'll be no more unnatural barriers between us and them.
Then, said the bishop, we'd be able to teach the gospel of Jesus Christ to the little ones, wouldn't we? There'd be no rule against it.
That's right, said Ender.
They might not be converted, but there'd be no rule against trying.
I have to think about this, said the bishop. But perhaps, my dear infidel, your rebellion will open the door to the conversion of a great nation. Perhaps God led you here after all.
By the time the bishop, Dom Cristán, and Ender reached the fence, Mandachuva and the women had already been there for some time. Ender could tell by the way Ella was standing between her mother and the fence, and the way Novinia was holding her hands out in front of her face, that Novinia had already tried to climb over the fence to reach her son. She was crying now and shouting at him, Miro, Miro, how could you do this? How could you climb it? While Ella tried to talk to her to calm her. On the other side of the fence, four piggies stood watching, amazed. Wanda was trembling with fear for Miro's life, but she had enough presence of mind to tell Ender what she knew he could not see for himself.
That's Cups, and Arrow, and Human, and Leaf Eater. Leaf Eater's trying to get the others to plant him. I think I know what that means, but we're all right. Human and Mandachuva have convinced them not to do it.
But it still doesn't get us any closer, said Ender.
Why did Miro do something so stupid?
Mandachuva explained on the way here. The piggies chew Cupim, and it has an anesthetic effect. They can climb the fence whenever they want. Apparently they've been doing it for years. They thought we didn't do it because we were so obedient to law. Now they know that Cupim doesn't have the same effect on us.
Ender walked to the fence.
Human, he said.
Human stepped forward.
There's a chance that we can turn off the fence, but if we do it, we're at war with all the humans on every other world. Do you understand that? The humans of Lusitania and the piggies together at war against all the other humans.
Oh, said Human.
Will we win? Asked Arrow.
We might, said Ender,
and we might not.
Will you give us the Hive Queen? Asked Human.
First, I have to meet with the wives, said Ender.
The piggies stiffened.
What are you talking about? Asked the bishop.
I have to meet with the wives, said Ender to the piggies, because we have to make a treaty, an agreement, a set of rules between us. Do you understand me? Humans can't live by your laws, and you can't live by ours. But if we're to live in peace, with no fence between us, and if I'm to let the Hive Queen live with you, and help you, and teach you, then you have to make us some promises and keep them. Do you understand?
I understand, said Human. But you don't know what you were asking for to deal with the wives. They're not smart the way that the brothers are smart.
They make all the decisions, don't they?
Of course, said Human. They're the keepers of the mothers, aren't they? But I warn you, it's dangerous to speak to the wives, especially for you, because they honor you so much.
If the fence comes down, I have to speak to the wives. If I can't speak to them, then the fence stays up, and Miro dies, and we'll have to obey the congressional order that all the humans of Lusitania must leave here.
Ender did not tell them that the humans might well be killed.
He always told the truth, but he didn't always tell it all.
I'll take you to the wives, said Human.
Leaf Eater walked up to him and ran his hand derisively across Human's belly.
They name you right, he said. You are a human, not one of us. Leaf Eater started to run away, but Arrow and Cups held him. I'll take you, said Human. Now stop the fence and save Miro's life. Ender turned to the bishop. It's not my decision, said the bishop. It's Buscinia's. My oath is to the Starways Congress, said Buscinia. But I'll perjure myself this minute to save the lives of my people. I say the fence comes down, and we try to make the most of our rebellion. If we can preach to the piggies, said the bishop. I'll ask them when I meet with the wives, said Ender. I can't promise more than that. Bishop, cried Novinia, Pippo and Libo already died beyond the fence. Bring it down, said the bishop. I don't want to see this colony end with God's work here still untouched. He smiled grimly. But Os Venerados had better be made saints pretty soon. We'll need their help. Jane, murmured Ender. That's why I love you, said Jane. You can do anything as long as I set up the circumstances just right. Cut off the ansible and turn off the fence, please, said Ender. Done, she said. Ender ran for the fence, climbed over it. With the piggy's help, he lifted Miro to the top and let his rigid body drop into the waiting arms of the bishop, the mayor, Dom Cristal, and Novinia. Navio was jogging down the slope right behind Donna Cristal. Whatever they could do to help Miro would be done. Wanda was climbing the fence. Go back, said Ender. We've already got him over. If you're going to see the wives, said Wanda, I'm going with you. You need my help. Ender had no answer to that. She dropped down and came to Ender. Navio was kneeling by Miro's body. He climbed the fence, he said. There's nothing in the books for that. It isn't possible. Nobody can bear enough pain to get his head right through the field. Will he live? Demanded Novinia. How should I know? Said Navio, impatiently stripping away Miro's clothing and attaching sensors to him. Nobody covered this in medical school. Ender noticed that the fence was shaking again. Ella was climbing over. I don't need your help, Ender said. It's about time somebody who knows something about xenobiology got to see what's going on, she retorted. Stay and look after your brother, said Wanda. Ella looked at her defiantly. He's your brother, too, she said. Now let's both see to it that if he dies, he didn't die for nothing. The three of them followed Human and the other piggies into the forest.
Buscinia and the bishop watched them go. When I woke up this morning, Buscinia said, I didn't expect to be a rebel before I went to bed. Nor did I ever imagine that the speaker would be our ambassador to the piggies, said the bishop. The question is, said Don Cristin, will we ever be forgiven for it? Do you think we're making a mistake? Snapped the bishop. Oh, not at all, said Don Cristin. I think we've taken a step toward something truly magnificent. But humankind almost never forgives true greatness. Fortunately, said the bishop, humankind isn't the judge that matters. And now I intend to pray for this boy, since medical science has obviously reached the boundary of its competence.
Chapter 17. The Wives. Find out how word got out that the evacuation fleet is armed with the little doctor. That is highest priority. Then find out who this so-called Demosthenes is. Calling the evacuation fleet a second genocide is definitely a violation of the treason laws under the code, and if CSA can't find this voice and put a stop to it, I can't think of any good reason for CSA to continue to exist. In the meantime, continue your evaluation of the files retrieved from Lusitania. It's completely irrational for them to rebel just because we want to arrest two errant xenologers. There was nothing in the mayor's background to suggest this was possible. If there's a chance that there was a revolution, I want to find out who the leaders of that revolution might be. Pyotr, I know you're doing your best. So am I. So is everybody. So are the people on Lusitania, probably. But my responsibility is the safety and integrity of the 100 worlds. I have 100 times the responsibility of Peter the Hegemon and about 1/10 of his power, not to mention the fact that I'm far from being the genius he was. No doubt you and everybody else would be happier if Peter were still available. I'm just afraid that by the time this thing is over, we may need another Ender. Nobody wants Xenocide, but if it happens, I want to make sure it's the other guys that disappear. When it comes to war, human is human and alien is alien. All that ramen business goes up in smoke when you're talking about survival. Does that satisfy you? Do you believe me when I tell you that I'm not being soft? Now see to it you're not soft either. See to it you get me results. Fast. Now. Love and kisses. Bawa. Gobawa Ikimbo. Chairman, Xenocide Oversight Committee. To Pyotr Martinov, Director, Congressional Secret Agency. Memo 44, 1970, 542. Citation, Demosthenes, the Second Xenocide. 87, 1972, 1-1-1.
Human led the way through the forest. The piggies scrambled easily up and down slopes across a stream through thick underbrush. Human, though, seemed to make a dance of it, running part way up certain trees, touching and speaking to others. The other piggies were much more restrained, only occasionally joining him in his antics. Only Mandachuva hung back with the human beings. "Why does he do that?" asked Ender quietly. Mandachuva was baffled for a moment. Wanda explained what Ender meant. "Why does human climb the trees or touch them and sing?"
"He sings to them about the third life," said Mandachuva. "It's very bad manners for him to do that. He has always been selfish and stupid."
Wanda looked at Ender in surprise, then back at Mandachuva. "I thought everybody liked human," she said. "Great honor," said Mandachuva. "A wise one." Then Mandachuva poked Ender in the hip. "But he's a fool in one thing. He thinks you'll do him honor. He thinks you'll take him to the third life."
"What's the third life?" asked Ender. "The gift that people kept for himself," said Mandachuva.
Then he walked faster, caught up with the other piggies.
"Did any of that make sense to you?" Ender asked Wanda.
"I still can't get used to the way you ask them direct questions. I don't get much in the way of answers, do I?"
"Mandachuva is angry, that's something. And he's angry at people. That's another. The third life, a gift that people kept for himself, it will all make sense.
When? In 20 years? Or 20 minutes? That's what makes Xenology so fun." Ella was touching the trees, too, and looking from time to time at the bushes.
"All the same species of tree. And the bushes, too, just alike. And that vine climbing most of the trees. Have you ever seen any other plant species here in the forest, Wanda?"
"Not that I noticed. I never looked for that. The vine is called Merdona. The Masios seem to feed on it, and the piggies eat the Masios. The Merdona root, we taught the piggies how to make it edible before the amaranth, so they're eating lower on the food chain now."
"Look," said Ender. The piggies were all stopped, their backs to the humans, facing a clearing. In a moment, Ender, Wanda, and Ella caught up with them and looked over them into the moonlit glen. It was quite a large space, and the ground was beaten bare. Several log houses lined the edges of the clearing, but the middle was empty except for a single huge tree, the largest they had seen in the forest. "The trunk seemed to be moving. It's crawling with Masios," said Wanda.
"Not Masios," said Human.
320, said Mandachuva.
"Little brothers," said Arrow.
"And little mothers," added Cups.
"And if you harm them," said Leaf Eater, "we will kill you unplanted and knock down your tree."
"We won't harm them," said Ender.
The piggies did not take a single step into the clearing. They waited and waited until finally there was some movement near the largest of the log houses almost directly opposite them. It was a piggy, but larger than any of the piggies they had seen before.
"A wife," murmured Mandachuva.
"What's her name?" asked Ender. The piggies turned to him and stared.
"They don't tell us their names," said Leaf Eater. "If they even have names," said Cups. Human reached up and drew Ender down to where he could whisper in his ear, "We always call her Shouter, but never where a wife can hear." The female looked at them and then sang. There was no other way to describe the mellifluous flow of her voice, a sentence or two in wives' language. "It's for you to go," said Mandachuva. "Speaker, you." "Alone?" said Ender. "I'd rather bring Wanda and Ella with me." Mandachuva spoke loudly in wives' language. It sounded like gargling compared to the beauty of the female's voice. Shouter answered, again singing, only briefly. "She says of course they can come," Mandachuva reported. "She says they're females, aren't they? She's not very sophisticated about the differences between humans and little ones." "One more thing," said Ender. "At least one of you as an interpreter, or can she speak Stark?" Mandachuva relayed Ender's request. The answer was brief, and Mandachuva didn't like it. He refused to translate it. It was Human who explained. "She says that you may have any interpreter you like, as long as it's me." "Then we'd like to have you as our interpreter," said Ender. "You must enter the birthing place first," said Human. "You are the invited one." Ender stepped out into the open and strode into the moonlight. He could hear Ella and Wanda following him, and Human padding along behind. Now he could see that Shouter was not the only female here. Several faces were in every doorway. "How many are there?" asked Ender. Human didn't answer. Ender turned to face him. "How many wives are there?" Ender repeated. Human still did not answer. Not until Shouter sang again more loudly and commandingly. Only then did Human translate. "In the birthing place, speaker, it is only to speak when a wife asks you a question." Ender nodded gravely, then walked back to where the other males waited at the edge of the clearing. Wanda and Ella followed him. He could hear Shouter singing behind him, and now he understood why the males referred to her by that name. Her voice was enough to make the trees shake. Human caught up with Ender and tugged at his clothing. "She says, why are you going? You haven't been given permission to go. Speaker, this is a very bad thing. She's very angry." "Tell her that I did not come to give instructions or to receive instructions. If she won't treat me as an equal, I won't treat her as an equal." "I can't tell her that," said Human. "Then she'll always wonder why I left, won't she?" "This is a great honor to be called among the wives. It is also a great honor for the Speaker of the Dead to come and visit them." Human stood still for a few moments, rigid with anxiety. Then he turned and spoke to Shouter. She, in turn, fell silent. There was not a sound in the glen. "I hope you know what you're doing, Speaker," murmured Wanda. "I'm improvising," said Ender. "How do you think it's going?" She didn't answer. Shouter went back into the large log house. Ender turned around again and headed for the forest. Almost immediately, Shouter's voice rang out again. "She commands you to wait," said Human. Ender did not break stride, and in a moment he was on the other side of the piggy males. "If she asks me to return, I may come back, but you must tell her, Human, that I did not come to command or to be commanded."
"I can't say that," said Human.
"Why not?" asked Ender.
"Let me," said Wanda. "Human, do you mean you can't say it because you're afraid or because there are no words for it?" "No words. For a brother to speak to a wife about him commanding her and her petitioning him, those words can't be said in that direction."
Wanda smiled at Ender. "No mores here, speaker. Language."
"Don't they understand your language, Human?" asked Ender.
"Male's language can't be spoken in the birthing place," said Human.
"Tell her that my words can't be spoken in wives' language, but only in male's language, and tell her that I petition that you be allowed to translate my words in male's language."
"You are a lot of trouble, speaker," said Human. He turned and spoke again to Shouter.
Suddenly the glen was full of the sound of wives' language, a dozen different songs like a choir warming up.
"Speaker," said Wanda, "you have now violated just about every rule of good anthropological practice."
"Which ones did I miss?"
"The only one I can think of is that you haven't killed any of them yet."
"What you're forgetting," said Ender, "is that I'm not here as a scientist to study them. I'm here as an ambassador to make a treaty with them." Just as quickly as they started, the wives fell silent. Shouter emerged from her house and walked to the middle of the clearing to stand very near to the huge central tree. She sang. Human answered her in brother's language. Wanda murmured a rough translation. "He's telling her what you said about coming as equals." Again, the wives erupted in cacophonous song.
"How do you think they'll respond?" asked Ella.
"How could I know?" asked Wanda. "I've been here exactly as often as you." "I think they'll understand it and let me in on those terms," said Ender.
"Why do you think that?" asked Wanda.
"Because I came out of the sky. Because I'm the speaker for the dead." "Don't start thinking you're a great white god," said Wanda. "It usually doesn't work out very well."
"I'm not Pizarro," said Ender.
In his ear, Jane murmured, "I'm beginning to make some sense out of the wives' language. The basics of the male's language were in Pipo's and Lebo's notes. Human's translations are very helpful. The wives' language is closely related to male's language, except that it seems more archaic, closer to the roots, more old forms, and all the female-to-male forms are in the imperative voice, while the male-to-female forms are in the supplicative. The female word for the brothers seems to be related to the male word for Masio, the tree worm. If this is the language of love, it's a wonder they managed to reproduce at all." Ender smiled.
It was good to hear Jane speak to him again. Good to know he would have her help.
He realized that Manda Chuva had been asking Wanda a question, for now he heard her whispered answer.
"He's listening to the jewel in his ear." "Is it the Hive Queen?" asked Manda Chuva.
"No," said Wanda. "It's a..." She struggled to find the word. "It's a computer. A machine with a voice."
"Can I have one?" said Manda Chuva.
"Someday," Ender answered, saving Wanda the trouble of trying to figure out how to answer. The wives fell silent, and again Shouter's voice was alone. Immediately the males became agitated, bouncing up and down on their toes. Jane whispered in his ear.
"She's speaking male's language herself," she said. "Very great day," said Arrow quietly. "The wives speaking male's language in this place never happened before." "She invites you to come in," said Human. "As a sister to a brother, she invites you."
Immediately, Ender walked into the clearing and approached her directly. Even though she was taller than the males, she was still a good 50 centimeters shorter than Ender, so he fell to his knees at once. They were eye to eye. "I am grateful for your kindness to me," said Ender.
"I could say that in wives' language," Human said.
"Say it in your language anyway," said Ender. He did. Shouter reached out a hand and touched the smooth skin of his forehead, the rough stubble of his jaw. She pressed a finger against his lip, and he closed his eyes but did not flinch as she laid a delicate finger on his eyelid. She spoke.
"You are the holy speaker," translated Human.
Jane corrected the translation. He added the word holy. Ender looked Human in the eye. "I am not holy," he said. Human went rigid. "Tell her..." He was in turmoil for a moment. Then he apparently decided that Ender was the less dangerous of the two.
"She didn't say holy." "Tell me what she says as exactly as you can," said Ender.
"If you aren't holy," said Human, "how did you know what she really said?"
"Please," said Ender, "be truthful between her and me."
"To you I'll be truthful," said Human, "but when I speak to her, it's my voice she hears saying your words. I have to say them carefully."
"Be truthful," said Ender.
"Don't be afraid. It's important that she knows exactly what I said. Tell her this. Say that I ask her to forgive you for speaking to her rudely, but I am a rude framling, and you must say exactly what I say."
Human rolled his eyes, but turned to Shouter and spoke.
She answered briefly. Human translated. "She says her head is not carved from Merdona root. Of course she understands that. Tell her that we humans have never seen such a great tree before. Ask her to explain to us what she and the other wives do with this tree."
Wanda was aghast. "You certainly get straight to the point, don't you?"
But when Human translated Ender's words, Shouter immediately went to the tree, touched it, and began to sing. Now, gathered closer to the tree, they could see the mass of creatures squirming on the bark. Most of them were no more than 4 or 5 centimeters long. They looked vaguely fetal, though a thin haze of dark fur covered their pinkish bodies. Their eyes
were open. They climbed over each other, struggling to win a place at one of the smears of drying dough that dotted the bark. "Amaranth mash," said Wanda.
"Babies," said Ella. "Not babies," said Human. "These are almost grown enough to walk."
Ender stepped to the tree, reached out his hand. The shouter abruptly stopped her song, but Ender did not stop his movement. He touched his fingers to the bark near a young piggy. In its climbing, it touched him, climbed over his hand, clung to him.
"Do you know this one by name?" asked Ender.
Frightened, Human hastily translated and gave back Shouter's answer.
"That one is a brother of mine," he said. "He won't get a name until he can walk on two legs. His father is a rooter."
"And his mother?" asked Ender.
"Oh, the little mothers never have names," said Human.
"Ask her." Human asked her. She answered. "She says his mother was very strong and very courageous. She made herself fat in bearing her 5 children."
Human touched his forehead.
5 children is a very good number, and she was fat enough to feed them all." "Does his mother bring the mash that feeds him?"
Human looked horrified. "Speaker, I can't say that, not in any language."
"Why not?"
"I told you, she was fat enough to feed all 5 of her little ones. Put back that little brother and let the wife sing to the tree."
Ender put his hand near the trunk again, and the little brother squirmed away. Shouter resumed her song. Wanda glared at Ender for his impetuousness, but Ella seemed excited.
"Don't you see? The newborns feed on their mother's body."
Ender drew away, repelled.
"How can you say that?" asked Wanda. "Look at them squirming on the trees, just like little Masios. They and the Masios must have been competitors."
Ella pointed toward the part of the tree, unstained by amaranth mash.
"The tree leaks sap here in the cracks. Back before the Descolada, there must have been insects that fed on the sap, and the Masios and the infant piggies competed to eat them. That's why the piggies were able to mingle their genetic molecules with these trees. Not only did the infants live here, the adults constantly had to climb the trees to keep the Masios away. Even when there were plenty of other food sources, they were still tied to these trees throughout their life cycles, long before they ever became trees."
"We're studying piggy society," said Wanda impatiently, "not the distant evolutionary past." "I'm conducting delicate negotiations," said Ender, "so please be quiet and learn what you can without conducting a seminar." The singing reached a climax. A crack appeared in the side of the tree.
"They're not going to knock down this tree for us, are they?" asked Wanda, horrified. "She is asking the tree to open her heart."
Human touched his forehead. "This is the mother tree, and it is the only one in all our forest. No harm may come to this tree, or all our children will come from other trees, and our fathers all will die." All the other wives' voices joined Shouter's now, and soon a hole gaped wide in the trunk of the mother tree. Immediately Ender moved to stand directly in front of the hole. It was too dark inside for him to see. Ella took her nightstick from her belt and held it out to him. Wanda's hand flew out and seized Ella's wrist. "A machine," she said. "You can't bring that here." Ender gently took the nightstick out of Ella's hand. "The fence is off," said Ender, "and we all can engage in questionable activities now." He pointed the barrel of the nightstick at the ground and pressed it on, then slid his finger quickly along the barrel to soften the light and spread it. The wives murmured, and Shouter touched Human on the belly.
"I told them you could make little moons at night," he said. "I told them you carried them with you."
"Will it hurt anything if I let this light into the heart of the mother tree?" Human asked Shouter, and Shouter reached for the nightstick. Then, holding it in trembling hands, she sang softly and tilted it slightly so that a sliver of the light passed through the hole. Almost at once she recoiled and pointed the nightstick the other direction.
"The brightness blinds them," Human said.
In Ender's ear, Jane whispered, "The sound of her voice is echoing from the inside of the tree." When the light went in, the echo modulated, causing a high overtone and a shaping of the sound. The tree was answering, using the sound of Shouter's own voice.
"Can you see?" Ender said softly.
Kneel down and get me close enough, and then move me across the opening. Ender obeyed, letting his head move slowly in front of the hole, giving the jeweled ear a clear angle toward the interior. Jane described what she saw. Ender knelt there for a long time, not moving. Then he turned to the others. "The little mothers," said Ender. "There are little mothers in there. Pregnant ones. Not more than 4 centimeters long. One of them is giving birth."
"You see with your jewel?" asked Ella.
Wanda knelt beside him, trying to see inside and failing. "Incredible sexual dimorphism. The females come to sexual maturity in their infancy, give birth, and die." She asked Human, "All of these little ones on the outside of the tree, they're all brothers?"
Human repeated the question to Shouter. The wife reached up to a place near the aperture in the trunk and took down one fairly large infant. She sang a few words of explanation.
"That one is a young wife," Human translated. "She will join the other wives in caring for the children when she's old enough."
"Is there only one?" asked Ella.
Ender shuddered and stood up. "That one is sterile, or else they never let her mate. She couldn't possibly have had children."
"Why not?" asked Wanda.
"There's no birth canal," said Ender. "The babies eat their way out." Wanda muttered a prayer. Ella, however, was more curious than ever.
"Fascinating," she said. "But if they're so small, how do they mate?"
"We carry them to the fathers, of course," said Human.
"How do you think? The fathers can't come here, can they?"
"The fathers," said Wanda. "That's what they call the most revered trees."
"That's right," said Human. "The fathers are ripe on the bark. They put their dust on the bark in the sap. We carry the little mother to the father the wives have chosen. She crawls on the bark, and the dust on the sap gets into her belly and fills it up with little ones."
Wanda wordlessly pointed to the small protuberances on Human's belly.
"Yes," Human said. "These are the carries. The honored brother puts the little mother on one of his carries, and she holds very tight all the way to the father."
He touched his belly.
"It is the great joy we have in our second life. We would carry the little mothers every night if we could."
Shouter sang long and loud, and the hole in the mother tree began to close again.
"All those females, all the little mothers," asked Ella, "are they sentient?"
It was a word that Human didn't know. "Are they awake?" asked Ender.
"Of course," said Human.
"What he means," explained Wanda, "is can the little mothers think? Do they understand language?"
"Them?"
asked Human.
"No, they're no smarter than the Cabras, and only a little smarter than the Masios. They only do 3 things, eat, crawl, and cling to the carry.
The ones on the outside of the tree now, they're beginning to learn. I can remember climbing on the face of the mother tree, so I had memory then. But I'm one of the very few that remember so far back."
Tears came unbidden to Wanda's eyes. "All the mothers, they're born, they mate, they give birth and die. All in their infancy. They never even know they were alive."
"It's sexual dimorphism carried to a ridiculous extreme," said Ella. "The females reach sexual maturity early, but the males reach it late. It's ironic, isn't it, that the dominant female adults are all sterile? They govern the whole tribe, and yet their own genes can't be passed on."
"Ella," said Wanda, "what if we could develop a way to let the little mothers bear their children without being devoured? A cesarean section with a protein-rich nutrient substitute for the little mother's corpse. Could the females survive to adulthood?"
Ella didn't have a chance to answer. Ender took them both by the arms and pulled them away.
"How dare you," he whispered. "What if they could find a way to let infant human girls conceive and bear children which would feed on their mother's tiny corpse?"
"What are you talking about?" said Wanda.
"That's sick," said Ella.
"We didn't come here to attack them at the root of their lives," said Ender. "We came here to find a way to share a world with them. In 100 years or 500 years, when they've learned enough to make changes for themselves, then they can decide whether to alter the way their children are conceived and born. But we can't begin to guess what it would do to them if suddenly as many females as males came to maturity."
"To do what?" They can't bear more children, can they? They can't compete with the males to become fathers, can they? What are they for? But they're dying without ever being alive. They are what they are, said Ender. They decide what changes they'll make, not you. Not from your blindly human perspective, trying to make them have full and happy lives just like us.
You're right, said Ella. Of course you're right. I'm sorry.
To Ella, the piggies weren't people. They were strange alien fauna, and Ella was used to discovering that other animals had inhuman life patterns. But Ender could see that Wanda was still upset. She had made the Raman transition. She thought of piggies as us instead of them. She accepted the strange behavior that she knew about, even the murder of her father, as within an acceptable range of alienness. This meant she was actually more tolerant and accepting of the piggies than Ella could possibly be. Yet it also made her more vulnerable to the discovery of cruel, bestial behavior among her friends. Ender noticed, too, that after years of association with the piggies, Wanda had one of their habits. At a moment of extreme anxiety, her whole body became rigid, so he reminded her of her humanity by taking her shoulder in a fatherly gesture, drawing her close under his arm. At his touch, Wanda melted a little, laughed nervously, her voice low. "Do you know what I keep thinking?" she said. "That the little mothers have all their children and die unbaptized." "If Bishop Peregrino converts them," said Ender, "maybe they'll let us sprinkle the inside of the mother tree and say the words." "Don't mock me," Wanda whispered. "I wasn't. For now, though, we'll ask them to change enough that we can live with them and no more. We'll change ourselves only enough that they can bear to live with us. Agree to that, or the fence goes up again, because then we truly would be a threat to their survival." Ella nodded her agreement, but Wanda had gone rigid again. Ender's fingers suddenly dug harshly into Wanda's shoulder. Frightened, she nodded her agreement. He relaxed his grip. "I'm sorry," he said, "but they are what they are. If you want, they are what God made them. So don't try to remake them in your own image." He returned to the mother tree. Shouter and human were waiting. "Please excuse the interruption," said Ender.
"It's all right," said Human. "I told her what you were doing."
Ender felt himself sink inside. "What did you tell her we were doing?"
"I said that they wanted to do something to the little mothers that would make us all more like humans, but you said they never could do that or you'd put back the fence. I told her that you said we must remain little ones and you must remain humans."
Ender smiled. His translation was strictly true, but he had the sense not to get into specifics. It was conceivable that the wives might actually want the little mothers to survive childbirth without realizing how vast the consequences of such a simple-seeming humanitarian change might be. Human was an excellent diplomat. He told the truth, and yet avoided the whole issue. "Well," said Ender, "now that we've all met each other, it's time to begin serious talking." Ender sat down on the bare earth. Shouter squatted on the ground directly opposite him. She sang a few words.
"She says you must teach us everything you know, take us out to the stars, bring us the Hive Queen, and give her the light stick that this new human brought with you. Or in the dark of night she'll send all the brothers of this forest to kill all the humans in your sleep and hang you high above the ground so you get no third life at all."
Seeing the human's alarm, Human reached out his hand and touched Ender's chest.
"No, no, you must understand. That means nothing. That's the way we always begin when we're talking to another tribe. Do you think we're crazy? We'd never kill you. You gave us amaranth, pottery, the Hive Queen, and the hegemon."
"Tell her to withdraw that threat, or we'll never give her anything else."
"I told you, Speaker, it doesn't mean..."
"She said the words, and I won't talk to her as long as those words stand." Human spoke to her. Shouter jumped to her feet and walked all the way around the mother tree, her hands raised high, singing loudly. Human leaned to Ender.
"She's complaining to the Great Mother and to all the wives that you're a brother who doesn't know his place. She's saying that you're rude and impossible to deal with."
Ender nodded. "Yes, that's exactly right. Now we're getting somewhere." Again, Shouter squatted across from Ender. She spoke in male's language. She says she'll never kill any human or let any of the brothers or wives kill any of you. She says for you to remember that you're twice as tall as any of us, and you know everything, and we know nothing. Now has she humiliated herself enough that you'll talk to her?" Shouter watched him, glumly waiting for his response. "Yes," said Ender. "Now we can begin."
Novinia knelt on the floor beside Miro's bed. King and Olhado stood behind her. Dom Cristão was putting Quara and Gregor to bed in their room. The sound of his off-tune lullaby was barely audible behind the tortured sound of Miro's breathing. Miro's eyes opened. "Miro," said Novinia. Miro groaned. "Miro, you're home in bed. You went over the fence while it was on. Now Dr. Navio says that your brain has been damaged. We don't know whether the damage is permanent or not. You may be partially paralyzed. But you're alive, Miro, and Navio says that he can do many things to help you compensate for what you may have lost. Do you understand? I'm telling you the truth. It may be very bad for a while, but it's worth trying." He moaned softly, but it was not a sound of pain. It was as if he were trying to talk and couldn't. "Can you move your jaw, Miro?" asked King. Slowly, Miro's mouth opened and closed. Olhado held his hand a meter above Miro's head and moved it. "Can you make your eyes follow the movement of my hand?" Miro's eyes followed. Novinia squeezed Miro's hand. "Did you feel me squeeze your hand?" Miro moaned again. "Close your mouth for no," said King, "and open your mouth for yes." Miro closed his mouth and said, "Mmm." Novinia could not help herself. Despite her encouraging words, this was the most terrible thing that had happened to any of her children. She had thought when Lauro lost his eyes and became Olhado, she hated the nickname but now used it herself, that nothing worse could happen. But Miro, paralyzed, helpless, so he couldn't even feel the touch of her hand, that could not be borne. She had felt one kind of grief when Pippo died, and another kind when Libo died, and a terrible regret at Macan's death. She even remembered the aching emptiness she felt as she watched them lower her mother and father into the ground. But there was no pain worse than to watch her child suffer and be unable to help. She stood up to leave. For his sake, she would do her crying silently in another room. "He doesn't want you to go," said King. "I'll stay if you want," said Novinia. "But you should sleep again. Navio says that the more you sleep for a while..." "Doesn't want to sleep either," said King. Novinia stifled her immediate response to snap at King and tell him that she could hear his answers perfectly well for herself. This was no time for quarreling. Besides, it was King who had worked out the system that Miro was using to communicate. He had a right to take pride in it, to pretend that he was Miro's voice. It was his way of affirming that he was part of the family, that he was not quitting because of what he learned in the praça today. It was his way of forgiving her, so she held her tongue. "Maybe he wants to tell us something," said Olhado. "Or ask a question," said King. "Ah, that's great," said King. "If he can't move his hands, he can't write." "Same problema," said Olhado. "Scanning. He can scan. If we bring him in by the terminal, I can make it scan the letters, and he just says yes when it hits the letters he wants." "That'll take forever," said King. "Do you want to try that, Miro?" asked Novinia. He wanted to. The three of them carried him to the front room and laid him on the bed there. Olhado oriented the terminal so it displayed all the letters of the alphabet. facing so Miro could see them. He wrote a short program that caused each letter to light up in turn for a fraction of a second. It took a few trial runs for the speed to be right, slow enough that Miro could make a sound that meant this letter before the light moved on to the next one. Miro, in turn, kept things moving faster yet by deliberately abbreviating his words. P-I-G. Piggies, said Olhado. Yes, said Novinha. Why were you crossing the fence with the piggies? He's asking a question, Mother, said King. He doesn't want to answer any. Ah! Do you want to know about the piggies that were with you when you crossed the fence? Asked Novinha. He did. They've gone back into the forest, with Wanda and Ella and the speaker for the dead. Quickly she told him about the meeting in the bishop's chambers, what they had learned about the piggies, and above all, what they had decided to do. When they turned off the fence to save you, Miro, it was a decision to rebel against Congress. Do you understand? The committee's rules are finished. The fence is nothing but wires now. The gate will stand open. Tears came to Miro's eyes. Is that all you wanted to know? Asked Novinha. You should sleep. No, he said. No, 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 no. Wait till his eyes are clear, said King, and then we'll scan some more. D-I-G-A-F-A-L. Dijao falante pelos mortos, said Olhado. What should we tell the speaker? Asked King. You should sleep now and tell us later, said Novinha. He won't be back for hours. He's negotiating a set of rules to govern relations between the piggies and us, to stop them from killing any more of us, the way they killed people and and your father. But Miro refused to sleep. He continued spelling out his message as the terminal scanned. Together, the three of them worked out what he was trying to get them to tell the speaker, and they understood that he wanted them to go now, before the negotiations ended. So Novinha left Dom Cristão and Dona Cristan to watch over the house and the little children. On the way out of the house, she stopped beside her oldest son. The exertion had worn him out. His eyes were closed, and his breathing was regular. She touched his hand, held it, squeezed it. He couldn't feel her touch, she knew, but then it was herself she was comforting, not him. He opened his eyes, and ever so gently, she felt his fingers tighten on hers. I felt it, she whispered to him. You'll be all right. He shut his eyes against his tears. She got up and walked blindly to the door. I have something in my eye, she told Olhado. Lead me for a few minutes until I can see for myself. King was already at the fence. The gate's too far, he shouted. Can you climb over, Mother? She could, but it wasn't easy. No doubt about it, she said. Bosquinha's going to have to let us install another gate right here.
It was late now, past midnight, and both Wanda and Ella were getting sleepy. Ender was not. He had been on edge for hours in his bargaining with Shouter. His body chemistry had responded, and even if he had gone home right now, it would have been hours before he was capable of sleep. He now knew far more about what the piggies wanted and needed. Their forest was their home, their nation. It was all the definition of property they had ever needed. Now, however, the amaranth fields had caused them to see that the prairie was also useful land, which they needed to control. Yet they had little concept of land measurement. How many hectares did they need to keep under cultivation? How much land could the humans use? Since the piggies themselves barely understood their needs, it was hard for Ender to pin them down. Harder still was the concept of law and government. The wives ruled. To the piggies, it was that simple. But Ender had finally got them to understand that humans made their laws differently, and that human laws applied to human problems. To make them understand why humans needed their own laws, Ender had to explain to them human mating patterns. He was amused to note that Shouter was appalled at the notion of adults mating with each other and of men having an equal voice with women in the making of the laws. The idea of family and kinship separate from the tribe was brother blindness to her. It was all right for Human to take pride in his father's many matings, but as far as the wives were concerned, they chose fathers solely on the basis of what was good for the tribe. The tribe and the individual, they were the only entities the wives respected. Finally, though, they understood that human laws must apply within the borders of human settlements, and piggy laws must apply within the piggy tribes. Where the borders should be was entirely a different matter. Now, after 3 hours, they had finally agreed to one thing, and one thing only. Piggy law applied within the forest, and all humans who came within the forest were subject to it. Human law applied within the fence, and all piggies who came there were subject to human government. All the rest of the planet would be divided up later. It was a very small triumph, but at least there was some agreement. "You must understand," Ender told her, "that humans will need a lot of open land. But we're only the beginning of the problem. You want the Hive Queen to teach you, to help you mine ore and smelt metals and make tools, but she'll also need land. And in a very short time, she'll be far stronger than either humans or little ones. Every one of her buggers," he explained, "was perfectly obedient and infinitely hardworking. They would quickly outstrip the humans in their productivity and power. Once she was restored to life on Lusitania, she would have to be reckoned with at every turn." "Ruter says she can be trusted," said Human. And, translating for Shouter, he said, "The Mother Tree also gives the Hive Queen her trust." "Do you give her your land?" Ender insisted. "The world is big," Human translated for Shouter. "She can use all the forests of the other tribes. So can you. We give them to you freely." Ender looked at Wanda and Ella. "That's all very good," said Ella. "But are those forests theirs to give?" "Definitely not," said Wanda. "They even have wars with the other tribes." "We'll kill them for you if they give you trouble," offered Human. "We're very strong now. 320 babies. In 10 years, no tribe can stand against us." "Human," said Ender, "tell Shouter that we are dealing with this tribe now. We'll deal with other tribes later." Human translated quickly, his words tumbling over each other, and quickly had Shouter's response, "No, no, 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 no." "What is she objecting to?" asked Ender. "You won't deal with our enemies. You came to us. If you go to them, then you are the enemy too." It was at that moment that the lights appeared in the forest behind them, and Arrow and Leafeater led Novinia, King, and Olyado into the wives' clearing. "Miro sent us," Olyado explained. "How is he?" asked Wanda. "Paralyzed," said King, bluntly. It saved Novinia the effort of explaining it gently. "Nossa Senora," whispered Wanda. "But much of it is temporary," said Novinia. "Before I left, I squeezed his hand. He felt it and squeezed me back, just a little. But the nerve connections aren't dead, not all of them anyway." "Excuse me," said Ender, "but that's a conversation you can carry on back in Milagre. I have another matter to attend to here." "Sorry," Novinia said. "Miro's message. He couldn't speak, but he gave it to us letter by letter, and we figured out what went in the cracks. The piggies are planning war, using the advantages they've gained from us. Arrows, their greater numbers, they'd be irresistible. As I understand it, though, Miro says that their warfare isn't just a matter of conquest of territory. It's an opportunity for genetic mixing, male exogamy. The winning tribe gets the use of the trees that grow from the bodies of the war dead." Ender looked at Human, Leafeater, Arrow. "It's true," said Arrow. "Of course it's true. We are the wisest of tribes now. All of us will make better fathers than any of the other piggies." "I see," said Ender. "That's why Miro wanted us to come to you now, tonight," said Novinia, "while the negotiations still aren't final. That has to end." Human stood up, bounced up and down as if he were about to take off and fly. "I won't translate that," said Human. "I will," said Leafeater. "Stop!" shouted Ender. His voice was far louder than he had ever let it be heard before. Immediately everyone fell silent. The echo of his shout seemed to linger among the trees. Leaf-eater, said Ender, I will have no interpreter but human.
Who are you to tell me that I may not speak to the wives? I am a piggy, and you are nothing.
Human, said Ender, tell Shouter that if she lets Leaf-eater translate words that we humans have said among ourselves, then he is a spy. And if she lets him spy on us, we will go home now, and you will have nothing from us. I'll take the Hive Queen to another world to restore her. Do you understand? Of course he understood. Ender also knew that Human was pleased. Leaf-eater was trying to usurp Human's role and discredit him, along with Ender. When Human finished translating Ender's words, Shouter sang at Leaf-eater. Abashed, he quickly retreated to the woods to watch with the other piggies. But Human was by no means a puppet. He gave no sign that he was grateful. He looked Ender in the eye.
You said you wouldn't try to change us.
I said I wouldn't try to change you more than is necessary.
Why is this necessary? It's between us and the other piggies.
Careful, said Wanda. He's very upset. Before he could hope to persuade Shouter, he had to convince Human. You are our first friends among the piggies. You have our trust and our love. We will never do anything to harm you or to give any other piggies an advantage over you. But we didn't come just to you. We represent all of humankind, and we've come to teach all we can to all of the piggies, regardless of tribe.
You don't represent all humankind. You're about to fight a war with other humans. So how can you say that our wars are evil and your wars are good?
Surely Pizarro, for all his shortcomings, had an easier time of it with Atahualpa.
We're trying not to fight a war with other humans, said Ender. And if we fight one, it won't be our war trying to gain an advantage over them. It will be your war, trying to win you the right to travel among the stars.
Ender held up his open hand.
We have set aside our humanness to become Ramen with you.
He closed his hand into a fist. Human and Piggy and Hive Queen, here on Lusitania, will be one. All humans, all buggers, all piggies.
Human sat in silence, digesting this.
Speaker, he finally said, this is very hard.
Until you humans came, other piggies were always to be killed, and their third life was to be slaves to us in forests that we kept. This forest was once a battlefield, and the most ancient trees are the warriors who died in battle. Our oldest fathers are the heroes of that war, and our houses are made of the cowards. All our lives we prepare to win battles with our enemies so that our wives can make a mother tree and a new battle forest and make us mighty and great. These last 10 years we have learned to use arrows to kill from far off, pots and cabra skins to carry water across the dry lands, amaranth and merdona roots so we can be many and strong and carry food with us far from the macios of our home forest. We rejoiced in this because it meant that we would always be victorious in war. We would carry our wives, our little mothers, our heroes, to every corner of the great world, and finally, one day, out into the stars. This is our dream, Speaker. And you tell me now that you want us to lose it like wind in the sky.
It was a powerful speech. None of the others offered Ender any suggestions about what to say in answer. Human had half convinced them.
Your dream is a good one, said Ender.
It's the dream of every living creature. The desire that is the very root of life itself. To grow until all the space you can see is part of you, under your control. It's the desire for greatness. There are two ways, though, to fulfill it. One way is to kill anything that is not yourself, to swallow it up or destroy it until nothing is left to oppose you. But that way is evil. You say to all the universe, only I will be great, and to make room for me, the rest of you must give up even what you already have and become nothing. Do you understand, human, that if we humans felt this way, acted this way, we could kill every piggy in Lusitania and make this place our home? How much of your dream would be left if we were evil? Human was trying hard to understand.
I see that You gave us great gifts when you could have taken from us even the little that we had. But why did you give us the gifts if we can't use them to become great?
We want you to grow, to travel among the stars. Here on Lusitania, we want you to be strong and powerful, with hundreds and thousands of brothers and wives. We want to teach you to grow many kinds of plants and raise many different animals. Ella and Novinia, these two women will work all the days of their lives to develop more plants that can live here in Lusitania. And every good thing that they make, they'll give to you, so you can grow. But why does a single piggy in any other forest have to die just so you can have these gifts? And why would it hurt you in any way if we also gave the same gifts to them? If they become just as strong as we are, then what have we gained?
What am I expecting this brother to do? Thought Ender. His people have always measured themselves against the other tribes. Their forest isn't 50 hectares or 500. It's either larger or smaller than the forest of the tribe to the west or the south. What I have to do now is the work of a generation. I have to teach him a new way of conceiving the stature of his own people.
Is Ruter great? Asked Ender.
I say he is, said Human. He is my father. His tree isn't the oldest or thickest, but no father that we remember has ever had so many children so quickly after he was planted.
So, in a way, all the children that he fathered are still part of him. The more children he fathers, the greater he becomes. Human nodded slowly.
And the more you accomplish in your life, the greater you make your father. Is that true?
If his children do well, then yes. It's a great honor to the father tree.
Do you have to kill all the other great trees in order for your father to be great?
That's different, said Human. All the other great trees are fathers of the tribe, and the lesser trees are still brothers.
Yet Ender could see that Human was uncertain now. He was resisting Ender's ideas because they were strange, not because they were wrong or incomprehensible. He was beginning to understand.
Look at the wives, said Ender.
They have no children. They can never be great the way that your father is great.
Speaker, you know that they're the greatest of all. The whole tribe obeys them. When they rule us well, the tribe prospers. When the tribe becomes many, then the wives are also made strong. Even though not a single one of you is their own child?
How could we be? Asked Human.
And yet you add to their greatness. Even though they aren't your mother or your father, they still grow when you grow.
We're all the same tribe.
But why are you the same tribe? You have different fathers, different mothers.
Because we are the tribe. We live here in the forest.
If another piggy came here from another tribe and asked you to let him stay and be a brother,
we would never make him a father tree.
But you tried to make Pipo and Libo father trees.
Human was breathing heavily.
I see, he said. They were part of the tribe, from the sky, but we made them brothers and tried to make them fathers. The tribe is what we believe it is.
If we say the tribe is all the little ones in the forest and all the trees, then that is what the tribe is, even though some of the oldest trees here came from warriors of two different tribes fallen in battle. We become one tribe because we say we're one tribe.
Ender marveled at his mind, this small Raman. How few humans were able to grasp this idea or let it extend beyond the narrow confines of their tribe, their family, their nation.
Human walked behind Ender, leaned against him, the weight of the young piggy pressed against his back.
Ender felt Human's breath on his cheek, and then their cheeks were pressed together, both of them looking in the same direction. All at once Ender understood.
You see what I see, said Ender.
You humans grow by making us part of you, humans and piggies and buggers, Raman together. Then we are one tribe, and our greatness is your greatness, and yours is ours.
Ender could feel Human's body trembling with the strength of the idea.
You say to us, we must see all other tribes the same way, as one tribe, our tribe all together, so that we grow by making them grow.
You could send teachers, said Ender, brothers to the other tribes who could pass into their third life in the other forests and have children there. This is a strange and difficult thing to ask of the wives, said Human. Maybe an impossible thing. Their minds don't work the way a brother's mind works. A brother can think of many different things, but a wife thinks of only one thing, what is good for the tribe, and at the root of that, what is good for the children and the little mothers. Can you make them understand this? Asked Ender. Better than you could, said Human. But probably not. Probably I'll fail.
I don't think you'll fail, said Ender.
You came here tonight to make a covenant between us, the piggies of this tribe, and you, the humans who live on this world. The humans outside Lusitania won't care about our covenant, and the piggies outside this forest won't care about it.
We want to make the same covenant with all of them.
And in this covenant, you humans promise to teach us everything,
as quickly as you can understand it.
Any question we ask,
if we know the answer.
When? If? These aren't words in a covenant. Give me straight answers now, Speaker for the Dead.
Human stood up, pushed away from Ender, walked around in front of him, bent down a little to look at Ender from above.
Promise to teach us everything that you know.
We promise that.
And you also promise to restore the Hive Queen to help us.
I'll restore the Hive Queen. You'll have to make your own covenant with her. She doesn't obey human law.
You promise to restore the Hive Queen whether she helps us or not.
Yes.
You promise to obey our law when you come into our forest, and you agree that the prairie land that we need will also be under our law.
Yes.
And you will go to war against all the other humans in all the stars of the sky to protect us and let us also travel in the stars.
We already have. Human relaxed, stepped back, squatted in his old position. He drew with his finger in the dirt.
Now, what you want from us, said Human. We will obey human law in your city and also in the prairie land that you need.
Yes, said Ender.
And you don't want us to go to war, said Human.
That's right.
And that's all?
One more thing, said Ender.
What you ask is already impossible, said Human. You might as well ask more.
The third life, said Ender. When does it begin? When you kill a piggy and he grows into a tree, is that right?
The first life is within the mother tree, where we never see the light and where we eat blindly the meat of our mother's body and the sap of the mother tree. The second life is when we live in the shade of the forest, the half-light, running and walking and climbing, seeing and singing and talking, making with our hands. The third life is when we reach and drink from the sun in the full light at last, never moving except in the wind. Only to think, and on those certain days when the brothers drum on your trunk to speak to them. Yes, that's the third life.
Humans don't have the third life. Human looked at him puzzled.
When we die, even if you plant us, nothing grows.
There's no tree. We never drink from the sun. When we die, we're dead. Human looked at Wanda.
But the other book you gave us, it talked all the time about living after death and being born again.
Not as a tree, said Ender. Not as anything you can touch or feel or talk to or get answers from.
I don't believe you, said Human. If that's true, why did Pipo and Libo make us plant them?
Novenia knelt down beside Ender, touching him. No, leaning on him, so she could hear more clearly.
How did they make you plant them? Said Ender. They made the great gift, won the great honor, the human and the piggy together. Pipo and Mandachuva, Libo and Leaf Eater. Mandachuva and Leaf Eater both thought that they would win the third life, but each time Pipo and Libo would not. They insisted on keeping the gift for themselves. Why would they do that if humans have no third life?
Novinia's voice came then, husky and emotional.
What did they have to do to give the third life to Mandachuva or Leaf Eater? Plant them, of course, said Human. The same as today.
The same as what today? Asked Ender.
You and me, said Human. Human and the Speaker for the Dead. If we make this covenant so that the wives and the humans agree together, then this is a great and noble day. So either you will give me the third life, or I will give it to you.
With my own hand?
Of course, said Human. If you won't give me the honor, then I must give it to you."
Ender remembered the picture he had first seen only 2 weeks ago, of Pippo dismembered and disemboweled, his body parts stretched and spread, planted. "Human," said Ender, "the worst crime that a human being can commit is murder, and one of the worst ways to do it is to take a living person and cut him and hurt him so badly that he dies." Again, Human squatted for a while trying to make sense of this.
"Speaker," he said at last, "my mind keeps seeing this two ways. If humans don't have a third life, then planting is killing forever. In our eyes, Libo and Pippo were keeping the honor to themselves and leaving Mandachuva and Leaf Eater, as you see them, to die without honor for their accomplishments. In our eyes, you humans came out of the fence to the hillside and tore them from the ground before their roots could grow. In our eyes, it was you who committed murder when you carried Pippo and Libo away. But now I see it another way. Pippo and Libo wouldn't take Mandachuva and Leaf Eater into the third life because to them it would be murder. So they willingly allowed their own death just so they wouldn't have to kill any of us."
"Yes," said Novinia.
"But if that's so, then when you humans saw them on the hillside, why didn't you come into the forest and kill us all? Why didn't you make a great fire and consume all our fathers and the great mother tree herself?"
Leaf Eater cried out from the edge of the forest, a terrible, keening cry, an unbearable grief.
"If you had cut one of our trees," said Human, "if you had murdered a single tree, we would have come upon you in the night and killed you, every one of you. And even if some of you survived, our messengers would have told the story to every other tribe, and none of you would ever have left this land alive. Why didn't you kill us for murdering Pippo and Libo?"
Mandachuva suddenly appeared behind Human, panting heavily. He flung himself to the ground, his hands outstretched toward Ender.
"I cut him with these hands," he cried. "I tried to honor him, and I killed his tree forever."
"No," said Ender. He took Mandachuva's hands, held them. "You both thought you were saving each other's life. He hurt you, and you hurt him. Yes, killed him, but you both believed you were doing good. That's enough, until now. Now you know the truth, and so do we. We know that you didn't mean murder, and you know that when you take a knife to a human being, we die forever. That's the last term in the covenant, Human. Never take another human being to the third life, because we don't know how to go."
"When I tell this story to the wives," said Human, "you'll hear grief so terrible that it will sound like the breaking of trees in a thunderstorm."
He turned and stood before Shouter and spoke to her for a few moments. Then he returned to Ender.
"Go now," he said.
"We have no covenant yet," said Ender.
"I have to speak to all the wives. They'll never do that while you're here in the shade of the mother tree, with no one to protect the little ones. Arrow will lead you back out of the forest. Wait for me on the hillside, where Rooter keeps watch over the gate. Sleep if you can. I'll present the covenant to the wives and try to make them understand that we must deal as kindly with the other tribes as you have dealt with us."
Impulsively, Human reached out a hand and touched Ender firmly on the belly.
"I make my own covenant," he said to Ender. "I will honor you forever, but I will never kill you."
Ender put out his hand and laid his palm against Human's warm abdomen. The protuberances under his hand were hot to the touch. "I will also honor you forever," said Ender.
"And if we make this covenant between your tribe and ours," said Human, "will you give me the honor of the third life? Will you let me rise up and drink the light?"
"Can we do it quickly? Not the slow and terrible way that..."
"And make me one of the silent trees, never fathering,
without honor except to feed my sap to the filthy Masios and give my wood to the brothers when they sing to me?"
"Isn't there someone else who can do it?" asked Ender.
"One of the brothers who knows your way of life and death?"
"You don't understand," said Human. "This is how the whole tribe knows that the truth has been spoken. Either you must take me into the third life, or I must take you, or there's no covenant. I won't kill you, Speaker, and we both want a treaty.
I'll do it, said Ender. Human nodded, withdrew his hand, and returned to Shouter.
O Deus, whispered Wanda, how will you have the heart?
Ender had no answer. He merely followed silently behind Arrow as he led them to the woods. Novenia gave him her own nightstick to lead the way. Arrow played with it like a child, making the light small and large, making it hover and swoop like a suckfly among the trees and bushes. He was as happy and playful as Ender had ever seen a piggy be. But behind them, they could hear the voices of the wives, singing a terrible and cacophonous song. Human had told them the truth about Pippo and Libo, that they died the final death and in pain, all so that they would not have to do to Manda Chuva and Leaf Eater what they thought was murder. Only when they had gone far enough that the sound of the wives' keening was softer than their own footfalls and the wind in the trees did any of the humans speak.
That was the mass for my father's soul, said Wanda softly. And for mine, answered Novenia.
They all knew that she spoke of Pippo, not the long-dead venerado Gusto. But Ender was not part of their conversation. He had not known Libo and Pippo, and did not belong to their memory of grief. All he could think of was the trees of the forest. They had once been living, breathing piggies, every one of them. The piggies could sing to them, talk to them even somehow, understand their speech, but Ender couldn't. To Ender, the trees were not people, never could be people. If he took the knife to Human, it might not be murder in the piggy's eyes, but to Ender himself, he would be taking away the only part of Human's life that Ender understood. As a piggy, Human was a true Raman, a brother. As a tree, he would be little more than a gravestone, as far as Ender could understand, as far as he could really believe. Once again, he thought, I must kill, though I promised that I never would again. He felt Novenia's hand take him by the crook of the arm. She leaned on him.
Help me, she said. I'm almost blind in the darkness.
I have good night vision, Olliato offered cheerfully from behind her.
Shut up, stupid, Ella whispered fiercely. Mother wants to walk with him.
Both Novenia and Ender heard her clearly, and both could feel each other's silent laughter. Novenia drew closer to him as they walked.
I think you have the heart for what you have to do, she said softly, so that only he could hear.
Cold and ruthless, he asked. His voice hinted at wry humor, but the words tasted sour and truthful in his mouth.
Compassionate enough, she said, to put the hot iron into the wound, when that's the only way to heal it.
As one who had felt his burning iron cauterize her deepest wounds, she had the right to speak. And he believed her, and it eased his heart for the bloody work ahead. Ender hadn't thought it would be possible to sleep, knowing what was ahead of him. But now he woke up, Novenia's voice soft in his ear. He realized that he was outside, lying in the capim, his head resting on Novenia's lap. It was still dark.
They're coming, said Novenia softly.
Ender sat up. Once, as a child, he would have come awake fully, instantly, but he was trained as a soldier then. Now it took a moment to orient himself. Wanda, Ella, both awake and watching, Olliato asleep, King just stirring. The tall tree of Rooter's third life rising only a few meters away, and in the near distance beyond the fence at the bottom of the little valley, the first houses of Milagre rising up the slopes. The cathedral and the monastery atop the highest and nearest of the hills. In the other direction, the forest, and coming down from the trees, Human, Manda Chuva, Leaf Eater, Arrow, Cups, Calendar, Worm, Bark Dancer, several other brothers whose names Wanda didn't know. I've never seen them, she said. They must come from other brother houses.
Do we have a covenant? Said Ender silently. That's all I care about.
Did Human make the wives understand a new way of conceiving of the world?
Human was carrying something, wrapped in leaves.
The piggies, wordlessly, laid it before Ender. Human unwrapped it carefully. It was a computer printout.
The Hive Queen and the Hegemon, said Wanda softly. The copy Miro gave them.
the covenant, said Human.
Only then did they realize that the printout was upside down on the blank side of the paper, and there, in the light of a nightstick, they saw faint hand-printed letters. They were large and awkwardly formed. Wanda was in awe.
We never taught them to make ink, she said. We never taught them to write.
Calendar learned to make the letters, said Human, writing with sticks in the dirt, and Worm made the ink from cabra dung and dried masios. This is how you make treaties, isn't it?
Yes, said Ender.
If we didn't write it on paper, then we would remember it differently.
That's right, said Ender. You did well to write it down.
We made some changes. The wives wanted some changes, and I thought you would accept them.
Human pointed them out.
You humans can make this covenant with other piggies, but you can't make a different covenant. You can't teach any other piggies things you haven't taught us. Can you accept that?
Of course, said Ender.
That was the easy one. Now, what if we disagree about what the rules are? What if we disagree about where your prairie land ends and ours begins? So Shouter said, let the Hive Queen judge between humans and little ones. Let the humans judge between the little ones and the Hive Queen. And let little ones judge between the Hive Queen and the humans.
Ender wondered how easy that would be. He remembered, as no other living human did, how terrifying the buggers were 3,000 years ago. Their insect-like bodies were the nightmares of humanity's childhood. How easily would the people of Milagre accept their judgment? So it's hard. It's no harder than what we've asked the piggies to do. Yes, said Ender. We can accept that, too. It's a good plan.
And another change, said Human.
He looked up at Ender and grinned. It looked ghastly, since piggy faces weren't designed for that human expression.
This is why it took so long, all these changes,
Ender smiled back.
If a tribe of piggies won't sign the covenant with humans, and if that tribe attacks one of the tribes that has signed the covenant, then we can go to war against them.
What do you mean by attack? Asked Ender. If they could take a mere insult as an attack, then this clause would reduce the prohibition of war to nothing.
Attack, said Human. It begins when they come into our lands and kill the brothers or the wives. It is not attack when they present themselves for war or offer an agreement to begin a war. It is attack when they start to fight without an agreement. Since we will never agree to a war, an attack by another tribe is the only way war could begin. I knew you'd ask.
He pointed to the words of the covenant, and indeed, the treaty carefully defined what constituted an attack. That is also acceptable, said Ender. It meant that the possibility of war would not be removed for many generations, perhaps for centuries, since it would take a long time to bring this covenant to every tribe of piggies in the world. But long before the last tribe joined the covenant, Ender thought, the benefits of peaceful exogamy would be made plain, and few would want to be warriors anymore.